So this is part one of hopefully a 21 or 22 part series in which I hope to unpack the long view of Gullis. I think that in our day, for a range of reasons, maybe I'll dedicate an entire conversation to that. If we focus just on the Churban Beis HaMikdash and just on the stories of destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash, I think it's harder for people in today's world for a range of reasons to fully absorb the Avelos, the thought. Avelos, I think, especially in the 3 weeks, doesn't have to be only Avelos, but to live the experience and to live those 3 weeks. If you broaden a little bit and take the long view, where did Gullis come from? What is its purpose? How did we survive? How did we thrive? What were some of the low points of Gullis? It's a whole different experience. So I hope to take a panoramic view over these sessions or a couple minutes every day. So on that note, let's think about the beginning of the Torah. So there are four phrases here. Tohu, vohu, void, emptiness, choshech, darkness, al pnei sahom, on top of the abyss or on the abyss. A very well-known Chazal speaks of four different empires that are alluded to here. The Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, and the Roman Empire. And these are articulated as the forces of void, forces of evil, the forces of darkness. These aren't complementary terms. Now, the next time we see these four empires is in a very, very different context, not in a global context, but in Daniel's dreams, or in Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, which Daniel interprets, in which there are four different empires based on four different types of metals in one dream, four different types of monstrous animals in another dream. But that list of the four empires ends with some reference to Mashiach, some reference to Am Yisrael triumphing in the end of history. And by the way, you can already see some of this. It's less apparent, a little more covert, a little more camouflage in the Bris Bein HaBesarim. Putting these two together, and a lot of this is based on the Maharal's thought, it's not incidental that the four great empires, namely Babel, Parasumadai, Yavan, and Rome, are four empires that we tussled with. We tussled with Babel. They destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. We battled with Parasumadai. That's a Purim story. We battled with Yavan, clearly Hanukkah. And we're still battling with Rome, however we define Rome in its offshoots. Namely, putting all these imageries together, these are not just four empires that happen to dominate the world. These are four empires that challenge humanity with various moral dangers, religious dangers, whatever they are, without going into each of their respective cultures. They're the forces of Tohu, Vohu, and Choshech al pnei sahom. And we, the Jewish people, by wrestling, struggling with each of these powers, we're defending humanity against the infiltration of these very harmful, toxic forces that each of these cultures represent. Or, to say it a little bit differently, we filter these forces. Had we not defended humanity against this onslaught, those forces and technologies and developments would have been toxic. Now that we face them on the moral battlefield, whatever technologies in advance and progress, which clearly the Greeks advanced, which clearly the Romans advanced, now are filtered and they can be absorbed by humanity without the toxicity, without the toxins, without the infection. So if you want to update, because these are all prototypes and not just particular moments in history, what made Germany, Nazi Germany, so successful is that they marshaled all these technologies, transportation, communication, psychology, engineering, and all the great technological advances of the 19th century and the 20th century, and of course they harnessed it all for a genocidal war machine to kill millions of Jews, and of course not just millions of Jews, but millions of other people, hundreds of millions of people on the battlefield. And we stood up, and the free world stood up to Germany, and now all these technologies can be absorbed by humanity because they've been cleansed and purged. of their toxic nature. And that's why the Jewish people battle against these four kingdoms. And those are the battles described in Daniel's prophecies or dreams, and those are the battles alluded to in Avraham's Brisbane Abbasarim, where, again, without getting into the nitty-gritty details of all the birds and what happens to the last bird when Avraham shoos away the bird, or at least Avraham sees the bird being shooed away, and that's Mashiach. And to a degree, it's alluded to in Bilaam's prophecies. So if you combine the way these four empires are referred to in Bereishis, forces of evil, forces of darkness, threats, and the fact that the Jewish people happened to, we weren't exiled by some South American country. We weren't exiled by some small little Near Eastern country. We're exiled by these major empires, and in our struggles with these empires of tohu vavohu, as described in the dreams of Daniel, we're defending humanity against its worst version of itself. Now, what does this all have to do with Gullus? Well, there are two versions to our struggle with all these forces of tohu vavohu. One version, one narrative, is that we struggle against these forces and we provide moral inspiration to humanity from our home base in Eretz Yisrael. It's less violent. There still may be interactions, military interactions, but we don't suffer the persecution, the hardship, the discrimination. We wreck that narrative. And this will be a spoiler alert. I'll be describing this many times throughout this series. Because we wreck that narrative, we had to enter Gullus, which was always a potential narrative in the history that HaKadosh Baruch Hu planned. And whether we stood in our home base in Israel or had to travel this world to battle those cultures and those dangerous ideas depended upon our behavior. And when our behavior went south, then we were forced to participate in that second, harsher narrative called Gullus. But it puts a very different spin on Gullus. Gullus is not only a punishment, I'll talk about how it's a punishment, obviously, throughout this series, but it's also, one could say, a natural expectation, being that we have a universal mission to encounter all these cultures and to defeat them. Well, in theory, you can play a home game, those sports fans will understand, and sometimes you have to play a road game. So we lost home field advantage, but the terms of Jewish destiny and the terms of Jewish history didn't change dramatically. And our presence in Gullus was not just a sentence. We're slowly ticking off the days and years or making scratches in the wall, how long we'd get out of jail. We were actively involved in continuing to shape the world under very different terms, under terms that were persecution, discrimination, hardship, adversity. But it wasn't completely antithetical to Jewish heritage and Jewish destiny. And that is a good way to put a little framing and context to Gullus. It's to understand Jewish historical responsibility, to understand our interaction with the four empires. And the four empires don't just have to be four specific ones. They could be continuing confrontations, offshoots, cultural offshoots of those empires, whether Germany is genetically part of Edom or not. It certainly draws on ancient Roman views of war and Roman views of empire, and even the imagery that the Germans chose was very similar to some of the Roman imagery. I gave a share about this, about the eagle, and I don't know the exact name of the German Nazi eagle that was taken from the Roman insignia of the eagle. So it doesn't have to be genetic. It could be intellectual. It could be symbolic. It could be cultural. Anyway, it's a nice way to start this whole conversation, try to think about not just the Churban Beis HaMikdash that happened with Tisha B'Av, but how Jewish history was affected by Gullus, which was never meant to happen, but was always Plan B, waiting on the shelf. And if we didn't merit Plan A, we had to labor under Plan B.